This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. What should parents do when their 8-year-old daughter has the body of a 13-year-old? More families are facing that question as a greater percentage of girls in the United States are experiencing puberty at earlier ages. Later in the show, Cincinnati police have a new contract with the city and a look at the resurgent trend of upcycling. But first, Dr. Louise Greenspan, a pediatric endocrinologist, and Dr. Juliana Deerdorf, an adolescent psychologist, are two of the leading investigators researching the causes and effects of early puberty in girls. They join us to discuss early onset puberty and their book, The New Puberty, How to Navigate Early Development in Today's Girls. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Louise and Juliana, welcome to Cincinnati Edition. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Louise, who first took note of early puberty, and how long ago has that been?
So one of the landmark researchers who published, was the first author of the study, came out in 1997, and it was based on investigations of girls from the 1990s. Her name is Marcia Herman Giddens, and she started really investigating girls about 20 years earlier, noticing that some girls that were victims of sexual abuse were going through puberty earlier. And it turns out that it wasn't the puberty that predisposed them to sexual abuse, it was the other way around. So she started wondering, wow, what are the other causes of early puberty, and is it really happening earlier? There was a lot of controversy in my professional area of expertise in pediatric endocrinologists not believing this 1997 paper, which showed that some girls were starting puberty as early as 7. So in 2002, Julie and I have been part, since then, have been part of a study that has been studying the same group of girls, and actually a third of the girls were from the Cincinnati area. So we've been studying these girls from New York, Cincinnati, and San Francisco, and we've been showing that girls as early as 7 are showing signs of breast development and pubic hair.
You were saying the early study caused some controversy, Louise. Is this more of a settled issue these days?
It is. In 1997, there was a lot of controversy because of the study design. It looked at a group of girls once in their life. Our study has looked at girls through time, and I want to give a shout-out to Dr. Frank Biro and Dr. Susan Pinney at Children's Hospital and University of Cincinnati because they've been a big part of the study. So these girls were maybe part of your audience who are listening right now. And once this study came out, which Dr. Biro was the first author on that paper in 2010, I think that at that point, that pretty much was the nail in the coffin to show, yes, this really is starting earlier, because the study that we've been involved with has looked at the same group of girls over the past 9 years and has studied them from the age of 6 to 8 years of age and found that they really were going through puberty earlier.
Juliana, can you talk about when and why both of you started your investigation on early puberty?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a really nice marriage of different disciplines taking a look at what's going on with girls starting puberty earlier. So I'm a psychologist. Louise is a pediatric endocrinologist. And we started working with this kind of multidisciplinary team of folks who were interested in chemical exposures and body fat and nutrition and various other factors. The three main culprits that we outline in our new book are that have, you know, some good scientific evidence for being concerned about are the increasing trends of obesity in the United States over the past several decades. I think body fat is linked to early puberty. Also chemical exposures. There are many chemical exposures that mimic hormones in the body. The research is still in its infancy, but we're concerned about those. And there are also factors in a girl's home environment and neighborhood environment that may be suspect in terms of her starting puberty earlier.
Louise, how does the medical profession define puberty in a girl, and when does it usually start?
That's a great question, because I think the lay public thinks of puberty as being a girl's first period, and we don't think that happens until age 12. Our research is showing that a significant proportion of 7-year-old girls have breast development or pubic hair. And technically, the onset of puberty is defined as the beginning of breast development, but there's some girls that do start with pubic hair. So we are now seeing that 25% of black girls have breast development at age 7, 15% of Hispanic girls, 10% of white girls. So it really is starting earlier. By age 8 3/4, the average African-American girl has started her breast development. And for Hispanic girls, the average age is now 9.3. And for Asian and white girls, it's still 9.7. Now, that's just for breast development. We think that periods are probably still happening around age 12, but us and other groups are looking at that. So we really are thinking that for normal girls, puberty starting at age 7 can be normal.
Yeah, and that's part of why we got really interested in studying the environmental exposures. So one of the main questions was, why would breast and pubic hair development be starting earlier when we're not seeing the same marked declines in first period or menstruation?
What effect, Louise, does early puberty have on that traditional age range for girls? I guess another way to put it is, how early is early?
Well, that's a really big problem now in my field. When I was trained, I was taught that any girl with signs of puberty under age 8 should be considered to need a hormone workup and have extensive blood testing, an x-ray of her hand, potentially MRI of the brain. And now what we're finding is, well, boy, if 25% of black girls have breast development at age 7, it's a lot harder to differentiate the six or seven-year-old who may have a hormone problem from the one who's just going through puberty earlier. So it's made the job of pediatricians and pediatric endocrinologists a lot more challenging.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. And has there been much research, Louise or Julianne, either one can answer this, I guess, from your different perspectives, but has there been much research done on whether early puberty is an issue for boys as well?
So that research is still in its infancy. We're not quite as we don't have the data that we have for the girls. It looks like, as Julie described, one of the main determinants of early puberty is probably obesity, and that's because obesity can make estrogen or other female hormones that promote breast development. For boys, that's going to be reversed. So those same hormones might actually delay boys' puberty. So we think that extreme obesity in boys might delay puberty, mild obesity might promote it. So the jury's still out on boys, which potentially means that we now have a larger differential between boys' pubertal development and girls. Boys were always a year or two behind girls, but now they might be more like 2 to 3 years behind girls, which sure makes middle school a more challenging social environment.
Although there has been some really interesting new provocative research, again by Marcia Herman-Giddens and her team, showing that certain markers of pubertal development may be starting earlier in boys as well.
Now, you're just starting to touch on the causes of early puberty in girls, and I gather from what you're telling me that it's a wide range of things that can trigger this. Is that one of the things that makes it a little bit more difficult to deal with this?
Absolutely. Yeah, that not only is it a wide range of things that probably are ubiquitous or really common in a girl's environment, but we know very, very little about their synergy, how they interact to also then cause kind of an augmented effect on early puberty. And one example in that realm is chemicals, chemical exposures, so those that mimic hormones in the body. We have some evidence from animal studies that they cause earlier puberty in, you know, rat and mice models. But once we get into the human world, we don't know a lot about how these chemicals may act together to potentially influence puberty. And to date, we've really found no one smoking gun in that arena.
Louise, I was surprised by some of the common things that your book listed as potential triggers for early puberty, things like lavender and tea tree oil. And what are some of the other common substances, some of the other common exposures that can act as puberty prompters?
So I'd like to go back to lavender and tea tree oil because I think that's a surprising one for a lot of people, and I think it speaks to the fact that natural is not necessarily safer, and consumers have to be very, very wise. So we do list some resources in our book because the science of the chemicals is changing so rapidly and the products are changing so rapidly that it's very, very hard for the lay consumer to know what to buy that is safe. So we do recommend people look. One app is called the Skin Deep app. But in general, as Julie said, there's no one smoking gun, but we do think that there are chemicals that may be contributing. So we are examining the effects of cigarette smoke, the effects of flame retardants, certain types of pesticides. We're also looking at compounds in personal care products, the other chemicals that people may be familiar with that we think might be causing puberty, although, again, the research is not there, are phthalates and BPA. One surprising thing that I think people may not know is the soy controversy. There's a lot of concern in my practice. I hear parents saying, oh, soy is a plant-based estrogen. I shouldn't give it to my daughter. And we know from larger studies of adults that women who ate soy as children have a lower risk of breast cancer. And what our study is showing is that the girls who ate soy seem to have a delayed onset of certain markers of puberty. So it looks like eating soy might actually be protective. And when I say eating soy, I mean the real thing, tofu, edamame. I don't mean soy protein isolate in a bar. So it's interesting because I think it's a very complex field, and there's a lot more questions than there are answers still.
Yeah, we were talking about
since going back to your question about lavender and tea tree oil. There are some compelling studies that are kind of buried in medical journals, case studies that have shown that both girls and boys who are exposed to large levels of the lavender or tea tree, the actual oils, essential oils, have shown signs of breast development. So, you know, it's an endocrine disruptor. It depends on how it gets into the body. But these are things that are found in a lot of personal care products for very young children.
Yeah, I'm very surprised about soy, too, because I had always heard that it mimics estrogen. So I was under the impression that that was something that might be an early puberty prompter. And what about...
Well, it may mimic estrogen, but what it speaks to is the timing of the exposure. So we talk about windows of susceptibility. So it matters at what age you are when you are exposed to this chemical. So if you're exposed to soy as a very young girl, your body might think, oh, there's too much estrogen. I need to become resistant to estrogen. And then later on, the body is resistant to all forms of estrogen. So that does speak to timing, not just what chemical it is, but how old you are when you are exposed to that chemical.
Louise, what about red meat? Is that something to be concerned about?
So red meat per se, no. I think the concern is the overall diet that someone may be eating. And the concern about red meat is the meat that has been processed using a lot of antibiotics may be a contributing factor because antibiotics make those animals grow faster and go through puberty faster. We do know that diets that are limited in red meat are the healthier diets for a host of reasons. So because of that, in our book on the chapter on diet, we really recommend eating a diet that's more Mediterranean-based that doesn't have as much red meat, but you certainly don't need to eliminate it completely.
We'll continue our conversation about early puberty in girls after the break, and you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guests this afternoon are Dr. Louise Greenspan and Dr. Juliana Deerdorf. Their book is The New Puberty, How to Navigate Early Development in Today's Girls. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's take a call right now. Elizabeth in Middletown. Good afternoon, Elizabeth. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Sure can.
Great. Okay, I want to thank these doctors very, very much for the research that they are doing. It is so important. And my concern is for the psychological aspect of these young girls. I myself was lucky. I went into puberty at age 13. Well, I'm 58 now, so I was lucky. That was normal. However, I was sexually abused at age 12 and also at age 4. And I also took part in a pilot research project at Stanford University back in 1992. And at that time, it was, you know, 1 in 3 women who are sexually abused. My main concern is that with these young girls developing into women's bodies at such a young age, the psychological aspect, I mean, because I totally feared puberty when I was growing up. I totally feared it. I did not want to become a woman. I did not want to be like my mother. I thought I would never be able to climb trees, let alone not knowing that my body was my body and I had a right to say no. Thus, I got pregnant at 17 and had an abortion, which I don't regret, But my main concern is that these young girls who are developing breasts and whatnot are susceptible to, you know, sexual abuse.
And psychological problems as well, as Elizabeth, like you're saying. It's a tough transition, and let's let Juliana address that. So thank you very much.
Sure, yeah, and you bring up some really good issues. I'm gonna unpack them, separate them into two buckets. And one is some of the emotional consequences that girls normally undergo just from going through puberty early. And then I'll talk a little bit about the sexual abuse piece, which I think is a really important, interesting subcategory of girls. So generally we know that even girls who weren't abused or who are growing up in warm, safe environments, if they're going through puberty earlier, they're at higher risk for emotional and behavioral consequences later in adolescence. So things like having body image issues, you know, they're growing bigger and taller and tend to have more body fat. There's also issues around depression and anxiety. And they tend to, because they're probably because they're sought out by older peers and older boys, engage in substance use experimentation and sexual experimentation earlier than their peers who go through puberty later. So you're absolutely right. There's a risk there. Now, one thing that we know from the literature, particularly the stuff that's come out more recently, is that, wow, parents matter. We used to think that, oh, parents become less important as girls enter adolescence. Well, that's really not true. If you can establish good, strong communication with your daughter before the big onset of hormonal changes that actually cause girls to draw away more and be more interested in their peers, then you've opened pipelines of communication early that can really be protective for those early developing girls. And the same goes for having really safe school contexts that promote safe peer relations. So schools with good, strong anti-bullying programs and no tolerance for those kinds of things. So those are a couple of things that we know are protective for girls who are developing early but haven't been exposed to some of the trauma that you're suggesting. Now, on the flip side, with the sexual trauma, this is really an understudied area, and you can imagine why. People are very hesitant in research to ask girls about whether they've experienced sexual trauma. And it's because once they unpack it, there's not resources to know what to do with it oftentimes in research settings. But as a clinical psychologist and someone who works with girls, you know, I got into this area of study because I was seeing a lot of adolescent girls with a lot of precocious sexuality, a lot of discomfort with their bodies, and many of them had been sexually abused earlier in life, and that's how they ended up seeing me. And I think we have a responsibility in our society now to start calling this out and feeling more comfortable in clinical settings, in pediatric settings, to dig a little deeper to determine whether some of these things have been going on instead of kind of turning away from them because we're scared and we don't know how to deal with them. So good training for clinicians on the front lines is going to be critical to pipeline girls into programs and get them out of potentially dangerous situations, because the points you bring up are really important and can cause lifelong trajectories of struggle, right?
Juliana, can early exposure to sexual content in the media, can that trigger puberty?
You know, that's a big $20 million question right now in the research literature. So, you know, probably the first conversation I had about that was with Marcia Herman Giddens, the person we described earlier, the researcher who had backed into some of this work through her work with sexually abused youth. She is really convinced from a clinical angle that that might be the case. And as the research on social media and exposure to sexual imagery explodes, I think we're going to know more and more about whether some of that visual imagery may trigger earlier puberty, but we just don't know right now.
Is it fair to say, and whoever wants to field this, feel free to do it, and probably would be a question for Juliana, is it fair to say that that puberty starts in the mind, the girl's mind, long before it starts to show physically?
Well, you know, it's biologically for sure. So I think Louise can really speak to hormones and the brain. We know that hormones affect the brain and its architecture and its development in dramatic ways. And the new fMRI research and kind of advances in technology have shown us that a lot of brain development isn't just dependent on age. It's dependent on when puberty starts and those hormones that are coursing through there. And parts of the brain that are really affected are areas in the subcortical region that are responsible for emotion and emotional memory and motivation, reward, and risk-taking.
Louise, did you want to weigh in on that as well?
I think it's true that puberty definitely starts before you see the physical signs of puberty. So the hormonal changes are being generated by the glands that are in the brain. So in that sense, puberty does start in the brain, but it may be in a different way than people think. But the regulator of puberty is deep, deep in the brain, and that starts emitting signals to the body well before you see the onset of breast development or pubic hair.
Louise, what about the possible physical effects of early puberty on a girl later in her life? Is she going to be more inclined to develop health issues later?
Well, yes, that is one concern. And this study that we were part of from the San Francisco, Cincinnati, and New York group was funded by the National Institutes of Health as a breast cancer prevention study. So it was called the Breast Cancer and the Environment Research Program. And we were looking at possible chemical exposures that may predispose women to breast cancer, which may also be the predeterminants of early puberty. And the reason for that is the earlier you are when you get your first period, the higher your risk of breast cancer. So we do have concerns. We don't know yet whether this phenomenon of early breast development and pubic hair is leading to actual earlier first period, and our study is investigating that. If it is, then we are concerned that it may predispose a girl to later breast cancer, but that's not a inevitable effect, and there's a lot of other things that women can do to minimize their daughter's risks of breast cancer. I think what's more concerning is that early puberty can predispose to eating disorders and alcoholism and the other psychological problems that we're concerned about because of the mismatch between the girl's age and the peers that she may seek out because of the way that she looks.
Yeah, and as medicine advances, we realize more and more that health problems are not separate from behavioral and emotional problems. So if you have trajectories of risk that start very early, they impact your health later in life.
But, Louise, just because a girl enters puberty early, that doesn't necessarily mean she has a medical problem, does it? I mean, sometimes early puberty can be a normal thing, right?
Well, most of the time now with these girls, there is no medical problem per se. So whether they don't need necessarily a full evaluation by a specialist like myself, what they do need is the support from their family and their community to make them feel healthy and normal. But it doesn't necessarily mean that there's anything wrong with them.
Now, how can a parent know when medical intervention might be necessary?
So I think it's always good for parents, if they have a concern and they're asking the question, that means that they should see the pediatrician. We actually have a little survey quiz in our book where parents can really go through and say, well, if my child's this age and they have this symptom, that they should do this. But in general, if they're asking the question, they should see their primary care provider, their children's doctor. That physician will then determine whether this is a girl who's part of this phenomenon or someone who's the pace or the age that she's at or the pace of the puberty means that she does need to see a specialist like myself.
Well, what kind of steps specifically would the doctor take if you take your daughter in and say, she's going through early puberty, can you assess what she's going through? What kind of steps would they take?
So the doctor's going to ask questions and do a physical exam. And if the doctor determines that the girl is really in early puberty, he may decide to get an x-ray of her hand, which is called a bone age x-ray. And that helps determine her sort of physiologic or biologic maturity, because the same hormones that make you develop breasts also make your bones mature faster, not necessarily only grow faster, but actually mature faster. And if that's advanced, the doctor may do lab tests and may decide to send the girl to a specialist like myself, a pediatric endocrinologist.
Juliana, does stress play a factor in early puberty? If your home life is not exactly the greatest, or if you're going through some kind of a life stress, can that trigger it?
Yeah, you know, there's been, we've known for a while that various environmental stress factors might delay puberty. So we've seen studies in times of war and in famine where puberty is delayed for long periods of time. What has come to light more recently in the last few decades is that that the family environment seems to be equally important, but kind of in the other direction. So if family environments tend to be less consistent, if there's less emotional connection between parents and children and more emotional distance, it appears that that it can be a trigger for girls to go through puberty earlier. And we're talking about kind of inconsistent parenting and disruption in very early times of life, from like 0 to 5, 0 to 7. Now, the good news is that warm parenting, close emotional connection, communication appear to delay the onset of puberty, at least on average when you're looking across a bunch of girls.
Well, that the final chapter of your book has a title that relates to that, and I really do like the title. It's Don't Have the Talk, Start the Conversation. So what you're saying there is talking about puberty with your daughter, that's going to be an ongoing process.
Yeah, and you know, when we think about the talk, we often think about the sex talk. And,
right.
And actually, the first signs of puberty have nothing to do with having sex. It's usually body odor. As Louise refers to it, it's stinky armpits are one of the first signs that puberty is coming. It starts far, even long before breast development for most girls. And so it's a nice doorway into entering that conversation at very young ages with girls about their anatomy, using appropriate anatomical terms, talking about showering, bathing, different kinds of hygiene issues. And if parents can start there with these kind of non-threatening conversations, they can get more and more comfortable with talking about the pubertal process, and that conversation will continue over the years as a girl goes through this transition.
So what's some other advice for having a successful conversation about puberty?
I think your timing and your location is important, so it really is important to start having these conversations young, and they may start about the body rather than just about puberty. I also think location is important. If you sit your kid down and have a talk, they're going to feel really intimidated. So it's good to do it in a slightly informal setting. You have to prepare yourself, but maybe if you're going to be in the car for a little bit with your child and you have enough time, that's a less intimidating place to have that conversation because you don't have to make eye contact and the kid can squirm. I think the most important thing is for the parent to be comfortable having this discussion. And if you portray that this is a bad thing or this is something to be embarrassed about, you send that message to your child. So it's really important that you try and start with something that you're comfortable discussing, because your comfort will be spread to your child and they will feel comfortable discussing this as a whole. And then they'll learn that you're someone that they can go to discuss these things.
Well, what's
and
your
reason? I have, you know, we recognize that some parents just aren't comfortable once we get into the, once their daughters are getting to the later stages of puberty, and so I think arming yourself with knowledge, reading books, getting tips and tools is important. But also sometimes it makes a whole lot of sense to reach out to a friend or colleague who is more comfortable talking about these issues. So, for instance, Louise and I do this every day, all day, and it's become really natural for us. And you might have a nurse practitioner who's a friend, or a nurse, or someone in this field. And so we've even talked about bringing someone over and having, you know, group conversations. There's great books out there for kids. So moms can read the books together. They can do it in a group, especially at young ages. Girls tend to be less self-conscious.
So I've done this with my kids' school because their puberty ed doesn't start till fifth grade. So for the last couple years, the moms of the fourth grade girls have asked me to have a little potluck, and we get some food in and everyone brings some food. And then we all sit around and I just lead a discussion about what does puberty mean, and I make it very comfortable for the girls and the parents. And then those parents that aren't comfortable discussing it have now learned sort of the technique to do it. So I do think having these parties, puberty party or whatever you want to call it, The other thing is that if you bring all the girls from one grade together, it helps create a community and bringing up discussions such as, we're not going to shame a girl because she is going through puberty early or she's not. We're going to support each other. And every one of you in this room is going to have this happen. It may be this year. It may not be for 5 years, but you will all have this process happen. So let's be kind to each other while we're doing this.
Hey, we've got about a minute left. Can you summarize quickly what some of the preventative steps are for heading off early puberty?
I think the first thing is lifestyle, really making sure that your children are eating healthy foods and getting enough exercise and drinking water, not drinking sodas or excessive amounts of juice.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, and, you know, just as a psychologist, warm, safe, consistent, stable environment, you're going to be the scaffolding for your girl as she's going through this time where lots of body changes are taking place and emotional changes.
Oh, good advice. Thank you both for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Dr. Louise Greenspan and Dr. Juliana Deerdorf, their book is The New Puberty, How to Navigate Early Development in Today's Girls.